made me weep, and you made me moan. Well, you caused me to leave, child, my happy home. But someday, baby, you ain't worried my life anymore.
Hello, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night, my podcastian friends. It was here again with the Master of None podcast. Back after this is a slightly longer break than I normally would do. So I'm sorry about that, but I hope everyone has been really well. I'm sure you've been waiting on tender hooks for my return. We are just slightly below the 100 mark for 100 listens. In fact, it's 99. So my wonderful, I'm sure, family and friends, I'm sure you'll kick it over that line perhaps today or tomorrow. But thank you very much. That's nice. I'm not sure if everyone... Hopefully there's someone tucked in there that I don't know. Maybe somebody that Eero has put onto this podcast. If you've stuck with the awkward nature of Podbean to be able to try and get a listen in there. So thank you very much if you did persevere and manage to sort it out. I really appreciate it. Thank you to everybody, as always, though. And you know who you are when you listen to them all. I really do appreciate it. And I'm getting the hang... sorry about the navigation talking there in the background. There we go. Let's turn you off. I really do appreciate it. And it's something I've adjusted to the idea that the people I know will be listening to me rabbit on for a while. I tend to think it's reasonably comfortable now. And hopefully it's stayed relevant and interesting. And just remember, you're always welcome to send me something. You can, if Instagram is the thing that you use over something like this, feel free to get in touch. Swamp Bastard Guitars is my relatively new Instagram. You can feel free to message me there, follow me, or just send me something. And bring up something that you'd like to hear me rabbit on about. I will endeavour to look into it first, though, so I don't come from a place of complete ignorance. I don't mind it being fairly open-ended too. I can speculate and make points about it that may not be 100%, but they'll just be my point of view of something. And yeah, I guess that's the whole idea, having a bit of a listen and just see what other people think. So yeah, always feel free to get in touch if you would like. Now, I was just casting my mind back before I started making this episode, just on, because it had been a little longer than normal. I think it's been about just over a week and a half since I made episode 7, and trying to remember, put into order in my mind what I have and haven't done. I definitely don't want to double up on something, you know, telling you like it's something brand new and you're thinking, you told us this last time, you dopey bugger. I would prefer not to do that if I can help it. But yeah, I was just casting my mind back and thinking about what I've been doing just in relation to my own pursuits, and wanted to share that with you first and foremost, and also my experience, I suppose, with Instagram so far. I'm sure a lot of people will be familiar with it anyway, and the things that you're interested in and how you go about chasing them up, and I guess checking out what other people get up to, and I guess it could be in any interest field as well. So it's got a lot of scope there. But because it's such a visually based medium, it's quite good, because I think it sort of connects you straight away with whatever that interest is. And I don't think I've had a really extensive look so far, but I've definitely touched upon some other like-minded builders and hobbyists and people that do it as their business as well, but have quite a strong social media presence. So there tends to be a lot of day-to-day bits and pieces with how they run their business and what they're getting up to, different events and so forth. And that's been really interesting to see. And I don't know if it has to do with their part of the world or it's just got everything to do with their marketing and their networking. And yeah, I guess that little world that they can expose their business to and get that reputation amongst. But there's been some really great ones, and everyone from sort of, I guess, like salvage businesses where, well, you have them everywhere doing old house fittings, from everything from handles and hinges to the old keys, doorbells, lights, switches, anything where people are either, I guess, looking for a bit of a different look as opposed to just what's modern, what's brand new, or they have an existing house in that particular era and they just want to keep it faithful to it, or they want to recreate something or have something with a bit of a unique flavour of its own. But yeah, there's one that I've been looking at. I think it's in Colorado, and they tend to do a lot of video stories to say what they're up to, and they had like a craftsman's market on the weekend, and that was a big build up to it. But they had somebody there, it looked like they were doing cigar box guitars. They were building them on a bench sort of in front of, I guess, people attending the markets, but also had some for sale as well. And so it just had a very wide range of different stall vendors. I thought that was a great idea. I mean, we have things like that here. We have cigar box sellers, I think, pretty much through every state and territory, that probably show up at markets and sell their wares. And Instagram's definitely been a place where it just shows you just how many people are involved in it. And that's everyone from a person like, I guess, myself, who is just building bits and pieces here and there when they have the opportunity and the time. They maybe sell one or two things and keep something for themselves when they really feel very, I guess, keen on keeping it, not selling it off. And then it goes right up to these businesses, like I said before. And it's what I've realised is just how many great styles are out there. You've got everything from the more traditional setups where it's quite simple and they've gone for, say, a single like broom handle styled diddly bow, but it's a cigar box guitar because it has the cigar box as part of it, but it's still called a diddly bow because it's one string. To the two string and then the three string sort of more proper in inverted commas cigar box guitars, and then right up to six string fully fledged. The only thing is they're a box and not the shape of a Stratocaster or a Gibson or what have you. But then you've got the people that are making Stratocaster, Les Paul, Explorer, SG copies. Now they're all big names, they're all very well known body shapes, and yeah, but people get the templates for them and they build their own versions. They badge them differently. They have different pickups and different touches to I guess, give them a unique flavour. But, yeah, they're making almost completely, well, probably even better versions because they are handmade of all these great classic guitars. And I probably never realised just how many there were. I always thought there would be, I hate to say it in a disparaging way, always realised there would be, say, Chinese copies, and, you know, the ones made in Taiwan and so forth, but probably didn't realise maybe the sheer amount of boutique electric guitar and acoustic guitar makers out there that are building it from scratch. And just because it's shaped like a Les Paul or whatever, that it is very much its own. It's based on that style because people love that style. That's what attracts people to it in the first place. But then almost every other part of it is unique to that builder. The combination of parts and everything. And plus, often fully customizable as well. So I guess that's something that I've learnt just by being on Instagram, is that you just go, wow, look at the sheer breadth of the number of people involved in these industries. And it's both, I guess, intimidating but encouraging as well, because it just shows that people are, whether they make a living off it, I'm not sure, but people are involved regardless. They're doing something they really love. Another thing that stood out to me was the difference between the US makers, some of the Australian makers, and then some of the English makers. Maybe that was just who I was drawn to just by their business name or the certain style of their instruments. But there's been a couple that were UK based that, to me, they have a different kind of flavour, the instruments themselves. I'm not sure I can put my finger on it, but I like the fact that it seemed more British or more, you know, English in the way that they were done. It seemed to be a lot more biscuit tins, cookie tins, whiskey like tins and boxes, like Glenfiddich tins, because they're quite a good shape. But people have done all different sort of combos and body arrangements using multiple tins for those whiskey bottles. And also, I guess, jewellery boxes and other things. So a couple of them were more salvaged items based, and a couple of them were more cigar box guitar based as well. But yeah, something about the style was distinct from the American cousins. And one of them that I ended up following, and then actually got in touch with me too, I think they'd suggested to have a guess what they were using as the sound hole mesh, because they were saying that they're all reclaimed or salvaged or upcycled materials. To me, and I kind of would have been really happy to have known that this was what it was, I suggested it was you can get those, I'm not sure what you'd call them. You put the tea bags in them, and they're like reverse tongs. You can squeeze it open, put the tea bags in, and then close it. And they have like a mesh ball on the end that you can, you know, dip into your teapot or a cup of tea. And I thought that perhaps it was those domed pieces of mesh from one of those, which, of course, the tea is the English... It is the English drink. I was hoping that was it. I was wrong. It was actually something that I think still speaks of an English thing. It was from tobacconists or a tobacco pipe. It was like a mesh filter that goes in there. I don't know how they're made, but they actually told me and said it was a good guess, but it was actually this. Which I thought was still actually quite cool. So they shaped them into a little sound hole mesh screen rather than using a pre-existing grommet with the screening and use them in there. So it just gives it a slightly different look to the ones that I've seen before. So little details like that, I just thought that was pretty cool as well. But definitely the cookie tin canjos and banjos kind of enthused me as well, because I've had a bunch of tins at home now for I think when I originally was doing some of these amps and guitars was 2012, so I would have had them since then. So I've had them for 7 years, because there was a chap who was very interested and actually bought, I think, three things that I'd made all in one go, and I was getting quite enthusiastic about me turning the tins into, you know, different instruments. And as the way things do, sort of dropped it off, and I never really got any details for him. I got all these tins and great things, and I felt very reluctant to just use them for something. Sort of felt like I might just show up one day and want them all back, which would be entitled to, but he kind of dumped them all with me. So now I'm starting to think, well, I guess ultimately, if they were to be used for something like that, then I guess that's the point. It's kind of, they've gone out into the world and they've been made into something that's got another life. They've been reused and not just left somewhere to collect dust. So I am considering, now that I've seen all these great UK cookie tin canjos, etc., of giving that a go and just not feeling the need to go strictly down the cigar box guitar route, because it's not something that I've still got things to learn about it. So the Vagabond that we have been talking about in previous episodes, felt more comfortable with that because that's totally from scratch. Don't feel like I'm wrecking a cigar box or doing it any damage. So I feel more comfortable with it. So maybe that would be the case with these as well, because they're made a little bit differently. You don't have to make it a through neck, which means you don't have to cut these great big slots in there. you can actually make this, it's, I guess I'll, the best way I could say is like a wraparound neck. And it goes, passes underneath the tin and then comes up on the other side, and you shape the rear of it to sort of cup over the back edge of the tin as well. So the whole thing is sort of held in there. There's probably one or two screws to secure it to the neck. It just seems far more, I don't know, it just keeps everything more intact than some of the ones that I had seen already. Anyway, so I was giving that some thought as well, and I felt that that was something that I might be more prepared to give a go to. But thinking about building a bunch of necks to sort of give me that momentum, if I, rather than trying to get stuck on one thing in one at each time, build a selection so there's a few options. You don't have to kind of get, I guess you'd call it like builder's block, like writer's block, but it's builder's block where you feel like you can't move forward on something because you're waiting on a part or waiting for a certain inspiration to come to you. You can get started and then swap across to something else and try it out. Now, I'm sorry, I do feel like I'm warbling on, so hopefully you haven't gone to sleep yet. If you have, hey, that's all right. You can use this in the evenings when you need to nod off. Anyway, so that's something I've been giving some thought to as well. I talk like I've got tons of time to give to it. I don't really. The last little bit of proper tinkering I did, it was quite good actually. I think I spoke about the other amps that I had almost finished up. And then on the Friday following episode 7, I sat down next to my daughter at the table and was all a bit in the moment because I had a couple of those amp harnesses ready. And I used a Mortine can to build what I call the Mozzie Rock amp. And it just sits up on its side on a couple of little bolts with their nuts to make little feet for it. And it just sits up like that. And you can switch it on. It's got all the same, you know, moving parts, so to speak. But it has this really kind of tinny, crisp tone to it. And so, as a bit of a sideline to trying to sell a couple of these things on eBay, because Instagram's just easy to use when it comes to the photos and doing videos, I popped a couple of videos on there of me poorly playing the new Vagabond guitar along with each of those amps that I was going to put up for sale, just so people could go, right, okay, that must be that amp there, and that's kind of what it sounds like. And that was a great experience, and I thank my daughter for helping me do the videos for that, very patiently working with me to get those there, so thank you. I guess that was a good use of Instagram as a tool maybe to help with that. I think, well, I know for sure that one person who sent me an offer, didn't actually purchase as yet, but has sent me an offer on one, said they actually had a look at the Instagram and really liked the sound of it. So I think even from that one comment, I feel quite encouraged that that's a good way to do it. I'm not particularly tech savvy when it comes to linking videos with the eBay description or anything like that. So I've just literally written it into the description. Go and check out this on Instagram if you want to watch some video samples of it. And so that at least for that person had worked quite well. So I think we'll keep doing that each time there's a new build. There was also I found a builder, I think it was in Louisiana, who makes amplifiers, and I think they're called Lullaby. And they're basically, I think, from scratch. They build tube amplifiers and different microphones. I think there was a prototype of a harmonica microphone. Now, I have harmonica microphones that I build. Now, they're very, very simple, based on the piezo element soldered pretty much directly to an input. I've done one with a volume as well. But for most part, yeah, it's just a direct wire up for all of those little stomp boxes and the microphones that I've done so far, and they've sounded really good. I think based on that kind of instrument, it works really well in relation to that. These were a lot more advanced, and from the way that the person was describing the development of each of them, it definitely gave me a, a sense of like, wow, this person knows exactly what they're doing. They've got a real passion and they have a real knowledge for the science behind it as well. So even if maybe they necessarily didn't come from a place of knowing at all, they'd done a lot of research into it and seemed to know what they were looking for, right down to blocking up every little other air hole in a custom-made timber box. So in a nice finger join on each of the corners, and making every effort to block up 100% of any other air hole that might alter the sound coming out of the box itself when the speaker's installed. And I thought, well, wow, there's dedication for you. I mean, you've got a cigar box where they're all shapes and sizes. You've got the Mortein can, which is exactly that. And I'm just sticking these amps in there and going, oh, that sounds good, or oh, that doesn't sound as strong as that one. I'm not as much of a fan of that. And then you've got this person has found through experimentation and development exactly what they want from each of their particular products, and then building, I guess, not on mass, but they are building a very sort of high quality piece of work from each of those. Now, I'm assuming that's their business. It looked like they'd opened a shop, like a shop front, and put some decking outside so they could have days where there's like live music. And I'm not sure if it's a studio facility as well. It sort of looks like it covers a few things. I probably need to have a look a bit closer at that as a business, because I found it quite interesting. And just from me liking a few of the posts, because there was a few items there that I thought just looked really good, and there was one that looked almost like some of my shaker mics. Now, I know what the innards of my shaker mics are. Like I said, they're fairly basic, and I definitely think that these are of a higher caliber in terms of what has been done to them and what they're made of. Because you get several different types of microphone, and you get cardio. Anyway, I was looking some up last night. Now, of course, while I'm doing this, I can't think of the name, so I sound like a right old twit. But there are several types. Now, I don't think the piezo-based one fits into any particular genre there. It just has a bit of a niche all of its own. So this person actually commented on something and said that we were kindred spirits, and I felt like saying, well, I think you're on a much higher level sort of playing field than myself, but I appreciated the sentiment and I could see the similarities there, and it made me think about maybe, I don't know, I guess expanding what I do to the microphones, just so there's more options when it comes to getting them. I like them as they are, but then at the same time, maybe they would benefit from some other types of elements. You can use old phone elements, the old crystal elements that used to be in some of the phones in the past, 50s, 60s and 70s. And there are also other things. You can get more traditional microphone setups as well, and then rebody them, I guess, into other items and other bodies. Gives them a different character, probably a different sound as well. Another Instagram business where it made me sort of think about what I do and what I appreciate in other builders, and what I could do to expand on my own ideas if that was something that became a possibility as well. So it's all about how much you spend on it to how much you think you could possibly get back on it, because I do like it to be self-supporting. I guess that's the thing I've always enjoyed about my particular hobby in that area, is that I like to feel like I haven't really put money into it, because I tend to be getting it back most of the time as well. So just sort of like a rotating expenditure on it. What was the other thing I was going to bring up was that I recently picked up a router. Well, it was on eBay. It was the cheapest possible one there. And it had, I'm guessing it was a Chinese form of 220 volt plugs, because there was a two-prong plug, and then there was a separate alligator clip that kind of was part of that wiring assembly, and that must be the earth clip. And there must be something on their plugs that allows you to clip this alligator clip on there as an earth plug. It's all a little bit scary, really, to look at. It didn't make you feel very safe. Anyway, my lovely dad very kindly switched out the lead on that to a 240 volt lead, which is, of course, what we use here in Australia, and very kindly switched that out. So that's now working, and I did use it the other day. And that's going to come in really handy for when I do these other Vagabond guitars. I have three other pieces of timber that are all of that body size and shape, and so that will be, if you haven't seen it, have a look at Swamp Bastard Guitars on Instagram, and you will see it, because it is the main profile picture. That's when it wasn't complete. Well, it's still not complete, but it's at a lesser stage of completeness than it is now. But I'm going to change that photo soon too, I think, to better represent all the things that that I tinker with. Anyway, if you haven't seen it, have a look, because it just gives you an idea then when I'm talking about the body. When I say body, it's a very loose term. It's just a big slab of hardwood. But it's cool too. There's something about it. So I'm going to route out. I did use it to do a little bit of edge routing. I'm going to try, it isn't a plunge router, but I'm going to pre-drill its starting point and then route out the pickup cutouts and also the control cutouts on the next three bodies with a few adjustments to the previous, to the first, the prototype model that is my personal one, just mistakes and all, I'll keep it. And I had come in from the US in MGB Guitar Parts is a business in the US, but I think because of the owner's experience in the Chinese market in his mainstream working life, and now that he's running his own thing, he has close relationships with manufacturers over there, and so despite it being, yes, of Chinese manufacturer, he's had some custom products that he's able to get made there for a decent price. So I actually picked up some, they're called the $5 Make It Holler single coil magnetic pickup. A very, very simple piece of work they are, because it's essentially one long bar magnet with the copper wiring wrapped around it. And I think it's a lower rating than probably a lot of other pickups, but it's apparently got quite a bit of power, so it just comes as is. Basically an undressed, very, very unglitzy magnetic pickup, just a one thing. It's quite small, it has the wires attached, so you can either, I guess, just attach it straight to an input, or I think in my case I'll at least put a volume on there, so there's that control, and keep it fairly simple though. And my thoughts being that I'm going to pop three of these on the next three of the Vagabond, because it just seems to suit that idea. They did come with a little aluminium cover plate as well. So once the hole's routed out and they're in, and there's a little channel for the wiring, because I'm going to keep that channel exposed as well, so the wires are there. I don't know why, just that appeals to me too. And it will go under the control plate, which I'll try to keep as a rustic kind of piece of metal. It'll look quite simple. It doesn't take up a lot of space. It's quite, I don't know, down and dirty. Yeah, the $5 Make It Holler. Now, that's $5, so it is a little bit more. But I've got a few of those. So looking forward to putting them in these next few builds. I think that they'll be a nice standard to pop in there. I have got a couple of the Chinese made full assemblies where you get volume, tone, and a fully sort of installable pickup. And I was considering using one of those in one of these, and I'll see how that goes. But so used to seeing them in a lot of the cigar box guitars and everything, I feel like if I was going to use it, I might change the mounting plate just so it has a little bit of a look of its own. You can't quite place where it's from. I kind of prefer that than everyone just going, oh yeah, he's got one of those units from, you know, from China. So that's something for, I guess, the next couple of stages. But also the necks are going to be different on the next batch as well. I think I might try a different neck on each one. My first one, it was just the one piece of hardwood. So it's quite a narrow neck. It's quite solid because it is the hardwood, but it is quite a narrow one. And I would rather have a separate fretboard while I'm learning how to do these. And yeah, I think the next three will all have fretboards, but they'll be of a slightly different sort of character each, just to see what works, what feels good. So I think one will have a pine neck, a heavy pine neck, but with a hardwood fretboard to give it some strength. Another one could be basically just two pieces of hardwood, or one heavy piece of hardwood, just so it has a much thicker neck than the previous one. So it's like having a fretboard in addition to what's already there. And then the other one I'm thinking could be a hardwood neck, but then some other material for the fretboard. Now, I don't think I'll use pine for the fretboard. I don't know why. I'm not keen on the look of the pine being on the front. So I'm even thinking, say, something like merbau, or I guess just a similar wood that's easily found at Bunnings. Because a lot of the woods they talk about are a little harder for us to sort of track down unless you buy them specifically. So it's going to be a bit of a trial and error thing. But I'm looking forward to just trying out the three of them. With what I've learnt from the first one, some of the things that I would do differently on the next time round. And yeah, the different kind of tuning heads. I need to get some that are actually have a nut on the other side as well. So when you screw them in, they lock in from both sides. You screw them in underneath, but you've got a nut on the top. It holds it very steadily. String guides as well. I've sort of learnt that I needed them. So whether it's a little eyelet hooks or a little screw where it just passes under the head of the screw to sort of take it into the right direction. There's a few little things that I guess I've learnt over doing the first one where I'd rather get the second, third and fourth done with a bit more continuity. They just feel like, yeah, no, I know now what I need to do, what I'd like to achieve, what I want the finish to be, and get that look from each of them. I'd like to feel better about each subsequent build. So by the time I've finished that fourth one, I can be like, well, that's for this particular body shape and what I want to achieve with this kind of guitar. I still want it to be rustic and a bit rough and ready, but I want it to still give that feeling of it was intended to be that way. It wasn't just thrown together kind of willy-nilly. So anyway, that's another direction to keep working, and I've got a lot more of the parts to make that happen now. So there's a few things still coming in. I've got bits for the amplifier circuits, I think I mentioned in the last episode. There's a few bits coming in, but I am going to have to wait until everything's there, until I can try my hand at some circuitry for amps that is from scratch. So that's something on the cards. I'll have to report back on that. And yeah, there's, like I said, the cookie tin developments and some of the, maybe the other cigar boxes. I was thinking I should try and make some single string diddly bows as well. Always held up on the details. That's my problem, I think. And I'd have so much more to show for it if I didn't get stuck on those little details or feel like I needed to, I don't know, achieve a certain amount in a certain amount of time or a certain finish. Just have fun with it and give it a go, I think, is probably the idea, because that's how you learn and that's how you work out what you like and don't like, rather than being kind of worried about trying it at all. But anyway, that's something to keep working on as well. So, I've talked about the router, I've talked about the Vagabond, the bits and pieces that I've seen lately in the world of Instagram and so forth. I think that was all I wanted to discuss in relation to what I've been up to, so I'm sorry that that's taken up pretty much the lion's share of a half an hour. Then I was thinking about what I've been listening to over the past week, and I had been listening to last podcast on the left. I seem to have stepped away from that slightly. I think maybe just, it's like anything, you need a change of theme or a change of the voices that you're listening to, the atmosphere that it I mean, you can only listen to so much about serial killers and horrors and real life horror stories, true crime. There's only so much you can take before it starts to all feel a bit dark. So I think maybe that was more the point. I just needed to change the direction of what I was listening to. So I had listened back to a couple of the episodes of the Cigar Box Guitar Builder that I've been enjoying. But because it hasn't been that long since I listened to it all anyway, I'm not feeling as sort of like I need to keep working my way through them. I have listened to them all now, so I'm kind of feeling that. I went back and listened to my... Well, my. It's not mine. I went back and enjoyed listening to... it was a sort of a documentary film, I suppose, about the story of the Endurance. And that made me think about that particular interest. I haven't brought it up, I don't think, unless it was just glancing on it very briefly, in the Arctic and Antarctic exploration, in the golden age of exploration back in the late 19th century and early 20th century. And I guess the one that always stood out, once I'd listened to a few different documentaries and looked up a bit on Wikipedia and other sources, and then I guess went back in time a little bit more, listened to some other different explorers through that age and heard their stories. The one that really stood out, it's such a cinematic, I mean, you couldn't script it if you tried, is the story of the Endurance. And Sir Ernest Shackleton is the explorer in question there. And just to briefly sort of touch on the story, he was an established Antarctic explorer before this particular expedition. And he'd had, I wouldn't say it was a failed attempt on the pole, but he did fail to get to the pole. But it was so close to success that it was a shame that they did turn back. But it was for the best and for the safety of the rest of the team anyway. So he was within 90 miles or so of the South Pole. And I think at that time that was quite an achievement, because Antarctica being the inhospitable and deeply cold place that it is, at that time with technology the way it was, it would have been a superhuman test really to get that far, and they did. So impressive. But yeah, they turned back, and then the pole was reached by Amundsen, and who was in sort of direct rivalry and competition with Scott, who was attempting the English expedition to the pole at the time as well. Very different methods, the pair of them, and from different directions. And they only found that out when they were almost... Well, I don't think they found out till they were at the pole. And Amundsen had been there, I think, 3 weeks earlier. And they wouldn't have had any word from base or from anywhere else to tell them that that was the case. So that feeling of being beat to it must have been crushing. And that's actually where Scott and the rest of his party actually all passed away. So Robert Falcon Scott was his name. And they all passed away not too far from a supply depot dump that they had made, 1-ton depot, on their way back. But I think part of their... I hate saying the word failure, but I think part of the reason they never made it back to their base camp was that feeling of failure, that feeling of getting so close but losing the ultimate prize. It I think would have crushed their spirits at the time as well. And with the Shackleton expedition, it was going to be the Transantarctic expedition. They were going to cross from one side of the Antarctic continent to the other in almost the shortest possible route, up through the Beardmore Glacier and then across past the South Pole and then coming on, out on the other side, which I think perhaps was the Weddell Sea. I think I'm either the wrong way around or I'm the right way around, and I've forgotten some of the names. But I think they approached it from the opposite, actually, from the Weddell Sea. And because of a particularly cold turn of weather at that time of year, the ship became icebound, and they were basically locked there for winter. And then even when it started to loosen up again, that caused the ship to get damaged to the point that it sank through the ice shelf. And they had never made it to land the actual continent itself. And then through, I guess, a mixture of luck, but also positive thinking perhaps as well, they drifted for a long, long, long way and then made a couple of leaps and bounds using the smaller boats that they had with them, the lifeboats, to get to Elephant Island, which is right up near the tip of that peninsula that extends out from Antarctica up into the north, before they would basically be adrift on open sea on probably a very, very quickly diminishing piece of ice. So they needed to find that land. And then the majority of the team stayed at Elephant Island and made a hut out of... They had three boats. They used two of those boats to make a form of hut, like a shelter, using stones and then the upturned boats, and had to survive there for, well, what turned out to be several months. While Shackleton had the notion to try and make it to... Now, I can't think of the name of the islands again. This is ridiculous. The South Georgia Islands. Every time I fail to think of the names of these things. And they set out a crew of four, I think, or yes, might have been more. Actually managed to, with very little navigational guides and very, very rough seas, managed to make it to South Georgia, the wrong side of the South Georgia Islands. And then three of them then hiked over the mountains to get to the whaling station on the other side of the island through uncharted, unplotted territory, and successfully made it. So then they had to pick up the companions they left on the other side of the island. Then they had to take a ship down to retrieve their other shipmates from Elephant Island. And all in all, that took a long time to make a successful voyage down there when the ice wasn't going to impede their progress and everything, to be able to mount a rescue. And in the end, that's what they were able to do, and everybody survived, which I think is the most incredible part of the whole story. Everybody survived that expedition in an age where to die on an expedition like that was not an unusual thing. It was probably expected, and then best case scenario was somebody came back to tell the tale and be heaped with praise and a knighthood, etc. So it's quite an astounding story in the fact that everybody who set out on that adventure came back from it. And I think it was probably lost a little bit at the time. It was World War One, and so the success of that rescue, at least, failure of the mission, but success of the rescue itself, was maybe overshadowed, which understandably so, by the world events at the time. But yeah, I enjoy that one. It's narrated by Liam Neeson, and there's a mixture of archival footage, but then fresh shot footage, I guess, to set a tone. And with the background noises and some of the sound effects they use as well, it's just very effective. It has a certain tone about it that I really like, and really feel like you're part of it. You're very immersed in the experience as it's being told. And I probably knew precious little about that entire age of exploration. But when you find something like that that you really enjoy, and I guess kind of it really gets your imagination fired up. You can really see it all happening. You can imagine it in your thoughts. And it becomes something that you want to know more about, because I think it's sort of mentioned in that documentary. It did mention a few other expeditions and so forth, and of course glanced over the previous ones that Shackleton himself had attempted. So it was very interesting to go back and try and find more information on some of those as well. And I can definitely say I enjoyed that part a lot. That was an interest I didn't realise would be something that would hold so much intrigue for me, and it really did. So I'd recommend, if history is something you enjoy, then absolutely check it out, because all of that age of exploration is just interesting to know about anyway. the sort of time that it was, that imperial time. And I think that also, if you are interested in exploration, it's a very, very exciting time, I think, because there weren't too many other territories and areas of the world that were left undiscovered, but those were kind of at the other end of the spectrum. It was hard to get down there, let alone to get onto the continent and explore it in any depth. So anyone who attempted it was very brave and noble, or perhaps very foolish, or perhaps a little bit of everything. But they were definitely seeking glory. And I think now, because of the quality of the documentaries you can find just on planet Earth, and even last night I was sort of had a quick look at one that was called Our Planet, and the photography in that, in regards to it was talking about the extent, the, you know, furthest extents of the Earth, North and South Pole, of course, and some of the changes that are happening there due to climate change and so forth as well. You just go, wow, what an astounding place. I mean, you're looking at it from the air and these beautiful drone shots and crystal clear camera quality pictures as well. And it's an amazing thing. And you try and put yourself in the place of these people who were there long before any of that came about, and before any kind of really accurate, trustworthy plotting could be done, and they really were in uncharted territory. So I just find that quite enthralling and exciting to kind of delve into. So I'd highly recommend just looking into that whole area. You don't have to watch any of those documentaries, but if you're just interested in that in general, there's also Franklin's Lost Expedition, which has really only fired back up interest in the last little while, because they've actually found, I think, both of the ships. There was Erebus and the Terror. Great names, both of them. They don't really sound very positive, but both ships were lost in somewhere in the Northwest Passage, and I think the entire crew disappeared. So that's a very sad story, and had a, I guess, a roll-on effect over the following years because of how many people it would have affected. But that's a very interesting story as well. Probably based, I guess, just the whole idea that they, for so many years, disappeared. There was no real evidence about what had happened. There were a lot of speculation, there were stories, but there wasn't any proof. And I guess we live in an age now where that's where what we seek. We seek proof. We don't want hearsay and legend and mythology. We want to see or hear, read, and be shown proof of something. So I think, because of these treasure hunters out there and people, the new explorers, they seek to investigate the past and shed more light on things that we maybe only understood from one angle. And they'll go in and they want to find the ship so they can position it and then, I guess, take a bit of a backwards step with what happened, try and walk things backwards and say, right, well, if they ended up here, they must have been trying to do this and try and establish some sense of order in the whole thing and make sense of it all. Anyway, so that's another particular story that really drew me in as well, and at the opposite end of the Earth as well. So I don't know, for some reason the Antarctic region, maybe because it's we are closer to it down here, holds a little bit more excitement for me over the North Pole. Plus, it is a full continent, where the North Pole really just sits on a shifting plate of ice that gets bigger and smaller each year with the seasons. But there is nothing there. It is all ocean. There's something very intriguing about the Antarctic continent that is just so massive and wasn't even really known about until, you know, almost into the 20th century. It's quite amazing, really. But yeah, I'd recommend having a look. Now, I'm going to tie things up now. I've been waffling on again for almost 50 minutes. I feel like I did waffle even more than normal today, so I apologise if that sort of, if it lost anyone along the way or it became boring. I hope you enjoyed it all the same. I enjoy just chatting, and it's sort of, it's as if someone else is in the car and you're just chatting, filling in the time, making something go quickly. I've just done a fairly long drive and barely felt it. So I appreciate
in advance your company for the drive, because it's definitely made it go quicker. So I hope everyone has a great couple of days, or until I leave another episode here. Sorry for the gap again. If you have been waiting with bated breath, I will attempt to make another one as soon as possible. Until then, do something fun, do something interesting. Tell me about it. Don't be shy. Come and find me on Instagram, Swamp Bastard Guitars. You can have a look at my eBay if you listen to this and you're just curious. It's Waz, W-A-Z, 1111, and then 2010, so 2010. That's the seller name. So you feel free to have a look and see the amps and stuff if you don't get a chance to look at the Instagram, because they're pretty much all there anyway. And yeah, get in touch. But yeah, until then, have a great week. Look after yourselves and each other. All right. See you soon. Bye.
Well, you made me weep, and you made me moan. Well, you caused me to leave, child, my happy home. But someday, baby, you ain't worry my life anymore.